formerly of San Francisco and Los Angeles. Jill Stengel now lives in Davis with her three children and her husband. She's done a great deal on behalf of poetry over the last several years, including running a poetry reading series, editing and publishing numerous chapbooks in a journal, Mem, under her A Plus Bend Press imprint, participated in several poetry collectives, formed a women's salon for postgraduate poetic study, taught poetry and book arts, and she actively participates in the Poet Moms Listserv community. Jill has nearly a dozen chapbooks of her own in print, several of which are also available to view online. Titles include Ladies with Babies, Late May, Only This, and I Would Open, and her newest, Equinox. Her full-length book, Dear Jack, is due out this summer from Black Radish Books. I'm very pleased to have her on the show with me. Jill Stengel, welcome to Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour.
Thank you, Dr. Andy. I'm happy to be here. Thanks for asking me.
Absolutely. I'm glad that this timing worked out. So, probably some people are wondering, with all the work that you've done on behalf of poetry in Los Angeles and San Francisco, what has brought you to Davis? And to what extent are you keeping up with your poetry ambition in our fair city?
I came to Davis for the reason that I think a lot of people come to Davis. One main reason is university connections. The other is family things. I was in San Francisco for 15 years, and I had a child, and came to Davis not very long after. It seemed like a better life for what we wanted as a family. Although it's a wonderful place for families in the city, also we wanted dirt instead of tire dust for our child to be rolling around in.
That makes sense. And so I haven't been to your home, but many of us in Davis, we step right out the back door onto dirt.
Yes.
And this was foreign to me as someone who grew up in Washington, D.C., and even when I lived in, San Francisco, Berkeley, Boston, London, I never had that, Chicago. And it's unusual and unexpected for those of us who have lived urban lives to have that kind of immediate relationship with the land.
It's very different. Every time I've ever moved, I've always felt that my new surroundings affect my writing. I haven't figured out exactly how my writing has changed living in Davis. My changes to parenthood have been more profound than my locational changes in many ways.
Mm-hmm.
But the dirt aspect is a very nice aspect. I'm in West Davis in Village Homes, which is a community that has a lot of dirt and a lot of fruit trees and walking paths and bike paths throughout, and it's a great place for a family, and I actually have featured some aspects of Village Homes in some of my poems, so it is definitely influencing my work. As for poetic aspirations, I'd say my main aspiration as a poet is to find the time to write.
Right.
And it's always been that way, just clearing away the other debris of life. There are always things that seem to be more pressing and more important. But when a person thinks through poetry and feels through poetry and pretty much exists through poetry, some of those other things do need to be shoved aside, even when it's hard, because poetry is the thing that matters.
Absolutely. I agree with you, and like me, you've done a lot of writing, but you've also thought about, well, how can I build communities around poetry and around poets? And I'm wondering if you can say more about some of the things that you've done offline and online. Was your reading series that you ran, was that in San Francisco?
It was in San Francisco, mm-hmm. Mostly in North Beach. And it was a reading and publication series that I did for a couple of years. It was a great deal of fun. It was pre-children. And every month I had 2 to 3 readers, and I published a chapbook for each reader. I would never be able to do that now because of the intense pace and demands on my time from that series. But it was an extremely fulfilling process to see a book come out of each reader's experience, and to also see all the people gather and to really create a community space. I find that writing is a very solitary activity. Some people write in groups with others and have writing groups and get a lot of feedback from their peers. I think that even with all of that, it's still a very solitary process.
Right.
And in order to bridge some of the isolation that can come with being an artist of any sort, I wanted to work on expanding my connections and work on community. The reading series and publications were a great way to do that. The journal that I did was a way to try to bridge the gap between writing and parenting. The journal was for women who were mothers of small children.
Mm-hmm.
And the Poet Moms Listserv is also for women who are mothering young children. And we have a lot of things in common in the parenting world, and also a lot of women who are poets now are also academics or heads of literary institutions. Their women are able to have children and do other things nowadays, which wasn't always the case, as we all know. But the community aspect of that is very necessary, because even though women are out in large numbers doing all kinds of exciting things, there is still strength in numbers, and we need to be talking privately about salaries. We need to be talking about opportunities. We need to be talking about where we can get our work published, how we can break through various glass ceilings.
Right.
There's a community, what is it called? It's VIDA, and it's women in the literary arts, and they've been compiling statistics for a couple of years about the rates of women in publications, both on the masthead and on the page, and we still have a ways to go.
I remember reading about studies, I don't know if it was from that group or someone else, that just talked about whose books are being reviewed by the New York Times.
That was probably Vida.
Yeah. Whose poems are appearing in the New Yorker and that sort of thing. Where if at the vanguard of the most notable publications that women's work seems not to be as highly valued, then that certainly suggests another kind of glass ceiling on the aspirations of women who want to participate in the most important conversations about books and poetry and literature and so forth in this country.
That's right. I think some of it is self-imposed. A lot of times women have to be asked 5, 6, 7 times to submit work, to appear somewhere, to do something. But some of that is training, and some of it is cultural. I think that a lot of it is not just women holding back, though. I think a lot of it is opportunity that is available or not available. In addition to concerning myself with issues about women and publication and community, I also do like men.
Mm-hmm.
And that was actually an interesting process that I went through with my reading series and my publications. I felt strongly that I wanted to promote the work of women, but I also didn't want to exclude half the world.
Right.
Not that half the world is writing experimental poetry, but the small amount of men that were writing experimental poetry. I wanted to be able to include everybody. So I guess I'm a bit of an idealist in a way.
Right.
Why can't we all be friends, right?
Sure. I agree with you. If you're just joining us, Jill Stengel is my guest, and she is the poet, the publisher, the world traveler, and she has a full-length collection coming out this summer. It's called Dear Jack, and that's from Black Radish Books. She's also published a dozen or so chapbooks, or she's had published a dozen or so chapbooks of her own, some of which you can view online. We're chatting with Jill Stengel. She is a poet who lives here in the city of Davis, who has nearly a dozen chapbooks to her name, and she's got a full-length collection coming out this summer from Black Radish Books called Dear Jack. And I'm very pleased to have her here live in the studio. I'm pleased, too, that later on musically we'll be joined by the ghosts of Thelonious Monk and John Coltrane, performing at Carnegie Hall. But for right now, Jill Stengel, I think people at home would love to hear, as it's sometimes said, More crooning and less tuning. Let's hear some actual poems now that we've talked about poetry. Tell me the title of that book in your hand.
The book in my hand is called Equinox. It's my most recent chapbook.
Excellent. And when you write poems, they tend not to fill a page. True?
I tend to write smaller poems, yes.
Right. And so it's possible, therefore, over a few minutes, for you to read very much of one of your recent publications.
This is true.
All right. Well, if it's all right with you and you don't mind sharing and you think that people listening can handle it, why don't we hear all of Equinox right now?
That sounds great.
Okay,
thanks.
Great. Ladies and gentlemen, here is Jill Stengel reading her most recent book titled Equinox.
Dear Equinox, what will you bring me? Or rather, what will I make of you? Enough with the waiting. I move ahead, outward, onward, into. Passive chalice ruptured. Dear Equinox, dear night and day filled with longing and seek, bless this path of search. Hold me in light so that I may see myself. And if the way be dark, I shall strike a match. And if the match is wet with tears, I will find my own light. I will burn brightly. I will find a way to find my way. Dear Equinox, dogs are howling on this night, in this night, through this night. Screech owls call. I don't want to tell you about the screech owls. I want to tell you about the forces of nature that course through my veins, through my being. Biology has its demands, has its way with will and might and won't, refuses to be denied. There are tears, there is ache. There is such desire. There is morning. There is night. There is day. There is struggle. Dear Equinox, a balance, perspective, teetering between worlds. Dear Equinox, wait, watch, want. What for? Predator, prey, inescapable. But sometimes, hard to say, who exactly is who? I am out here, raw as the night sky, waiting for you. Dear Equinox, rich fantasy life, rich quotidian, full, overflowing, the travel from need to want, survival to desire, thrive. Feel the throb of this pulse. Intoxicate. Dear Equinox, I just might stay out here all night, soaking up the stars, the sky, the sounds of hush and all the rest. The crickets begin to dominate. The words come more slowly, quieter, winding down. The sun always comes. I don't know what to say about that in this dark, dark, star-filled night, this great big night. Oh, night, I have asked you to hold me. I have wrapped myself in words, in pen and paper. I have thought and felt and written. I have yearned and exposed and asked only for you to let me sit here and write my words. And I have. And yet, oh, night, and yet I want more.
That was Jill Stengel reading her most recent publication called Equinox. So, Jill, that was delightful. I really enjoyed hearing that.
Thank you.
And you allude in a few places in that book to some topics that you had brought up at the start, and that is how is it that a busy poet, especially a parent, can find the solitude, the simplicity, the time to reflect, the separation and isolation, these sort of necessary ingredients for writing poetry that reflects the sort of receptivity and attention to language that is necessary for success. These are some of the things that it sounds like that you explore in your book, Equinox, and that, as you said at the start, is necessary for a poet to do what she needs to do, at least for many of us.
That's right. And for you as well. I'm sure you struggle with this experience also.
I do. The way that I take care of this, and I don't recommend this, is I wait until my children are asleep, and then I wait until my wife is asleep, and then I get to work. the time when I can be guaranteed no interruptions. And therefore, not at, I mean, there's kind of a sense of it with your equinox poems of being between, like, this world and another world, kind of that liminal space of in between. And that's kind of where I am when I write many of my poems.
That's when I write also.
Yeah. And sometimes we pay for that the next day.
I considered a barter system, sleep for poems.
Right.
It's like you say, sometimes you pay for it, but sometimes you have to.
The comedian Richard Wright once said that at about midnight, maybe 12:30 or 1 a.m., he starts dreaming whether he happens to be asleep or not. and often that's kind of what I'm waiting for with my poetry. You know, wait for those odd images and dreams to come.
You know, even pre-children, I taught myself to write in the dark, to not wake up my husband. I would write with a little bit of light coming in from the window, from the outside streetlights. And I find that to be a really freeing way of writing because I couldn't see well enough to read what I had already written. I just kind of had to keep going forward. I couldn't go back and self-correct or self-check.
Right.
And I took whatever it was that I got from that experience, and I've moved forward with it. I tried to just keep my writing going. There's always time for editing later. But if you keep tripping up over your own words as you're going, how will you ever get to the end?
Absolutely. And we use different parts of our brain, I think. The part that's inspired and that thrives on momentum and possibility and receptivity and so forth is often a very different part of our brain from the part that says, that's not a good line, you know, cut this in half. You need to shorten this. This needs a section that you need to write at some point, et cetera, et cetera.
Right.
All those judgments that have to be made. And kind of what you're describing is setting judgment aside and just writing and writing.
That's right. There's so, I guess to say that I only do that isn't accurate because I write in a lot of different ways. My chapbook before Equinox, it's called Only This, and it is made of collages. And a lot of people, when they think of poetry written in collage form, think of people taking from several books, several sources, pulling words, lines, phrases, and sort of building a new structure, a new poem from them. Whereas I took torn up pieces of paper and collaged words together.
Mm-hmm.
So there had to be a lot of critical thinking involved in that. Where do I want the page to go? How much glue do I need to apply?
Right.
All these kinds of things. Needed the lights on for this, definitely, and a lot of space. This particular book was put together during various appointments for my children. So I would go to these appointments with a bag of things, paper, glue, torn up things and previously made pages and just sit on the floor and spread everything out all over the place and have at my poems.
Right.
I know a lot of people who write in a lot of different ways, and it is always so inspiring to me to try different ways of writing and different games sometimes, you know, cross out every word except the fifth word and then build a poem out of that. Just different kinds of tricks and methods to start the process if the process is a little bit stalled, or if something feels too vulnerable or open or exposing, to make it more discreet, more murky and shadowed.
Mm-hmm.
When I was in New York last year, I read with about 20 other writers at one particular event. I'm part of a chapbook collective. We're online at dusie.org. That's D-U-S-I-E.org. And we've done 5 chapbook collectives. Each year has encompassed anywhere from, say, 35 to 70 poets. I'm not exactly sure the numbers, but it's pretty big numbers. And then this amazing woman, Susanna Gardner, who is sort of blessed and cursed with mild insomnia. She puts it all together. She doesn't have to trade sleep for anything. She just doesn't sleep very much. But she puts it all together to make it available online. So we all send our chapbooks out to each other. Sometimes we publish our own as part of the collective. Sometimes we publish others as part of the collective. Different people do different things.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a fantastic reading because so many people do things so differently, and there were infinitely many variations on how to be a contemporary poet, experimenting and experiencing, and I really enjoyed being around that much excitement and vital energy. As much as I love living in Davis for so many reasons, I don't often experience that heightened sense of collectivity and community that I found in New York and San Francisco more. But that also might be because I just simply don't get to go out very much.
Right.
I know when I do go to a reading or an arts event, I feel that uplifting, excited, invigorating feeling. Maybe I just need to get out more.
Yeah. Well, it sounds, too, that like the experimental nature of the poets with whom you're working and learning from, that really resonated for you in the sort of poetry that you write.
Mm-hmm.
And so even if there are lots of artsy types who come out to poetry readings or art galleries or music recitals, they're not always artsy in the way that we are.
That's right.
And there might be limitations on how well that kind of collaborative spirit is going to sustain a particular group.
I would agree with that. What I'm finding, which may be partially because of that and also partially because of my getting a little bit older or expanding my definition of community or whatever, the variety of reasons, I'm finding that I'm really enjoying being with people who work with different art types. I used to only want to be with poets and maybe hang out with a few painters or whatever, but it was really, I wanted to be in the poetry world deeply and thoroughly. And now I just want to hang out with people who are doing any kind of art, anything creative. And something that I've noticed in Davis that's different from the bigger cities is that people here don't tend to crow about their artistic pursuits as much. One of the first things that you find out about somebody in a bigger city is exactly what form their art is and exactly where they've appeared, and pretty much you get a bio as you're getting handshakes sometimes.
Right.
Whereas here, you could know someone for 5 years and then suddenly find out they're having a gallery show and say, oh, I never even knew that you were this accomplished, you know, potter or painter or dancer or whatever it is.
Right.
It's a different approach.
Yeah, that's true. One place that I notice it, and this might seem a little macabre, is in the obituaries in the Davis Enterprise, where you come across people and, you know, it talks about, you know, the first sort of things, family and their main job and so forth. But then often, and I see this more with women than with men, it goes into the other sorts of artistic pursuits that were important to them. Often originally as consumers and then increasingly as producers, and how that was sustaining to them throughout their lives. And so I think you're right. I think there are a lot of people like that in the city of Davis who I know that there's that new gallery on G Street right next to Drams Comics and Cards. So that's on G between 2nd and 3rd. That where I went to one of their open houses. And people who I know as like business owners and like poetry reading attendees have like a few paintings up, and they're actually pretty good. And so it's just fun to, you know, see them there.
I'll have to stop by there. I haven't been there yet.
Yeah, it's a great gallery, and I should know the name of it. It might be the Open Door Gallery, but we can check it out. That can be Googled.
Good.
Jill Stengel is my guest, and we've been talking about her books and the arts, obviously, on Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour on KDVS 90.3 FM in Davis. Jill, if you don't mind, let's have you choose one more poem for us to conclude this segment with.
I thought that I would read a little something from Only This, which is that collage manuscript that I was telling you about, a collage chapbook. Because the words and pages were torn up and glued back together, there are fragments of words. Some of these are not actually anything that I can really read aloud, but I will read you this one here from Only This. Words to be written down and the day. And I am so many people do phenomenon, that is to say, ik, rite, and ritual. Only those who exhalations, bliss. Of words roaming the plain, who do not even, and you outside last night without about all those words. My probably did exist, and sleep in it. Because I have a name I really can't recall, in to do with me, I am not the I, mine following word, read the signs.
That's very nice. Jill Stengel has been my guest. Jill, is there, how do we find out more about you or your books, especially if one wanted to purchase a copy of, for instance, your most recent book, Equinox?
First, I have to finish binding them all.
Okay. So
you can look online. Probably the most recent information would be through Ducey.org or perhaps Black Radish Books.
And Ducey.org, could you spell that for us again?
Ducey.org.
Excellent. That's terrific. Well, Jill Stengel, thanks so much for coming on Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour.